Hello and welcome to Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, the looking down on you, Luke Cutforth.
You are beneath me.
This week we're talking about incompetent interactions and discerning dogs. But first, Luke, I've got a question for you.
You always have a question for me, Corey.
I do, Luke. My question for you is why?
Because I want to.
Okay, and my question for you and everyone else is, have you ever embarrassed yourself in front of a dog?
No, I don't think it's possible to be embarrassed in front of a dog because they're thick.
My God. Now, if you were to say,
yeah,
be carrying a tray of milkshakes,
uh-huh,
and you were to trip and spill the milkshakes all over yourself.
Yeah.
Would you not feel embarrassed if Shakira was watching?
I don't know. I mean, I guess my follow-up question would be, if you were on a desert island all on your own and you did something embarrassing, would you feel embarrassed?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, well then, I guess that's just your own psychology.
Not like embarrassed. Like, I mean, I'd be like, oh, that was dumb. That was a dumb thing for me to do. I'd laugh at myself.
Uh-huh.
By the way, punchline to my joke, Shakira is thick. Carry on.
Like the dogs.
Like thick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She thick dough.
How do you know that's not what I was saying about the dogs?
Do you want to talk about puppy horny, Luke? Do you remember puppy horny? I feel like this is a good time to bring up your concept of puppy horny. You think the dogs are thick like Shakira.
You
right?
can't say that and then not let me explain.
Well, look, here's the thing. Either you're sexist by saying that Shakira is thick like a dog, or you're puppy horny.
To be clear, Corey, I can think Shakira specifically is stupid without thinking that women are stupid. Maybe I just think Shakira is stupid.
I just thought that Shakira was like the Ur-woman, you know? Like, uh-huh, like all women are based upon Shakira.
Wouldn't that be a lovely world?
Yeah, she was Eve, right? She's the first woman.
The OG.
Plucked from Adam's rib. Plucked from Adam's hip.
Anyway.
And that's why hers don't lie.
Oh, God. But they do lie. They do lie. That's the point. Wait, no, the snake lied. And Adam lied, but Eve, she was fine.
Yeah, her hips were telling the truth. Like, whilst she was trying to, you know, give Adam... No, hold on. Wait. Did Eve ever lie? Quick, give me a Bible lesson.
I don't think Eve lied. I think Adam lied because... No, Adam didn't lie. He was just a dick. He was just like, the woman told me to do it! Eve was like, the snake told me to do it. But that was also true. And
I think what actually happened is Eve was like, yo, I don't even know. I don't even know what happened. And then her hips were like, it was the snake. It was the snake. God, we don't lie. You know that.
Okay, let me get back on track. To be clear, puppy horny was my description of like when you're like, you see a puppy and you're just like, I need to stroke that puppy. And it was
You need to stroke the puppy?
Just because it was just this feeling of like, oh, it's just like a frustration. Like, I can't stroke the puppy. So I called it puppy horny as a joke. But I understand that sounds really bad and weird and freaky, but it was just like, oh, puppy,
you can't
just
stroke
so cute.
The puppy because of, what, societal expectations?
Well, yeah, it's not your puppy.
I think it's bad to stroke even a puppy that you own, Luke. I think it's honestly bordering on inhumane.
Oh, okay. Have you ever stroked a puppy?
That's disgusting. If I was going to stroke a dog, I'd only stroke an adult dog, first of all, Luke.
Right, yeah.
I feel like you're not picking up on the double entendre,
yeah,
of the word stroke.
Willfully, yes. Mm-hmm. What was your question?
Have you ever embarrassed yourself in front of a dog?
Right, yeah. Okay, so I think... I actually had this period of time in my childhood where I felt really sorry for my family dog because I was like, you'll never laugh. And I don't even know that dogs are capable of finding things funny. And I genuinely spent time wondering, like, can a dog find something funny? Even if they can't, like, laugh out loud, can they, like... Because funny is often, like... when there's a mismatch between what you... I think there's a quote that's like, man's attempt to achieve something and then like failing in their attempt in a sort of embarrassing way, right? It's like sort of slapstick comedy, right? And so can a dog find that funny? But then I think the dog would have to have theory of mind of like understanding what your intention was and then what the outcome was and then the difference between your outcome and the intention, and then that's where the comedy comes. And so I don't think dogs are capable of that. So I don't think dogs can find things funny, point one. And so therefore, I don't think you can embarrass yourself in front of a dog, point two, because the dog doesn't understand what you were trying to do, so doesn't understand that you should be embarrassed. And if you're getting embarrassed in the absence of any other person who's capable of finding you embarrassing, I think that you should seek therapy.
I have so many problems with what you've just said, so let me run them down. First of all, Luke, you said that dogs can't laugh.
Yeah. Well, hyenas can laugh. Is that what you're going to say?
They're felines, actually.
Okay, well then dogs can't laugh.
No. No. Dogs can't laugh is what you say, right? That's
yeah.
your that's the point that you're putting forward.
It's my hot take.
Muttley.
Muttley is not a it's not yeah, that's a cartoon. Yeah, that's a cartoon. Okay. Live dogs with hearts and blood pumping through their veins cannot laugh.
Okay. Fair point.
Yeah.
But my retort. Sorry. And I want to be clear. I know for a fact that probably like at least 30% of our audience will have no idea who Muttley is. I tried to talk about Wacky Races the other day, and almost nobody knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, it's that show that on CBBC that I never really watched that much. Catch the Pigeon, is that it?
Yeah, that is. Sorry. I love when you describe things exclusively through your own lens.
Yeah.
Yes, Wacky Races, the show that was on this one channel that I didn't
watch. I should write a dictionary just all from my perspective.
I would honestly read that. That's our next merch drop. It's the Luke Dictionary.
Sorry, I'm laughing like Muttley now. Continue
right?
your writing off of all of my points.
Oh, yes. So, one, dogs can laugh, obviously. Muttley. Two.
I disagree, but okay.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know if we can get the rights. If we can, then we're going to see Muttley laughing right now.
Okay, we don't need to. Stellar impression. You're doing a perfect job.
Thank you. Yeah, honestly, I was kind of in the last rounds for being on SNL UK.
Uh-huh.
And I did nothing except for that Muttley laugh. That got me through right up until the last.
They could just cut to you every time they wanted the audience to laugh, but they didn't.
The world can see my Muttley impression elsewhere.
Now. Far too many times.
I'm wondering how many times I can do
it. Every possible chance.
Before someone comments saying it's too much, before people unsubscribe, I feel like I've got a couple more in me.
I've already commented that in my head lots of times.
And I don't mind. No, so the other issue that I have is that you're saying that we can talk about dogs thinking about things that are funny in a second, but you're saying that, you know, to be embarrassed, someone, a third party, would have to see what you're doing and find it funny. And I don't think that's accurate.
I just think that when you say that you are embarrassed, like on your own, that's just you projecting and you sort of your own internal critic being like, you're an idiot. And I think that that internal critic, you need to like learn to, it needs to learn to love you. And if it doesn't, then that's why I say seek therapy.
No, that's totally fine. That I have no issue with. I deserve to be loved, you know, by my internal critic, by all critics, really. Internal, external. I'm not saying that there doesn't need to be a sort of third party there. What I'm saying is that third party doesn't need to be laughing at you or find something funny for you to be embarrassed. For example, you could do something and someone could then pity you, or someone could then think you incompetent, or you, is this ringing a bell for you?
Yeah, but I don't think dogs can do any of those things is my point.
Well, why don't we get into the study?
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, look, this episode is about, can dogs judge you? No, they can't. That's the answer.
Okay, what a relief.
End of episode.
So I was right the whole time. You were telling me I was wrong. You've got a study in front of you that proves me right.
Yeah, that's exactly why I chose to do this episode, because I wanted us to talk for about 20, 30 minutes about whether or not dogs could judge people. Only to say that they couldn't.
So you're posing a question that nobody asked. And then immediately being like, and that's why nobody asked it, because they didn't need to, because it was wrong anyway.
Yes.
Can pigeons use Windows XP? Here's a study. The answer is no, they cannot.
Yes. And does Corey ever utilize sarcasm?
Is there a study you're going to cite?
Oh, I was hoping you would provide some.
Oh, I never know, because most of your sarcasm goes straight over my head anyway.
That's true, yeah. Anyway, so this study, the title is Female Dogs Evaluate Levels of Competence in Humans. It was published November 2022 in Behavioral Processes, and there are many authors. Shall I read them out for you?
Yeah, have they all got fun names like the last one?
Well, there's one that sticks out. Let's see if you can spot which one it is.
Sticks out is a good pun about dogs. Carry on.
Yes, that was very intentional. So the names are Hitomi Chijiwa, Eri Horisaki, Yusuke Hori, James R. Anderson, Kazuo Fujita, and Hika Kuroshima.
Wow, one of these is not like the other.
Yeah, Hika Kuroshima? I caught on to you, bruh.
Like a sore thumb.
Yeah, no, I'm curious. I want to know how James R. Anderson like got into this.
Is this an international collaboration, or is he just like, has he emigrated?
Yeah.
Yeah, all of the above.
No, I don't know. I'm just saying, yeah, I wonder these things also. I could have looked them up. I could have done some digging. I could have found it out. But I just wanted to make a joke about one name being from a different geographical a language.
A racist region. Joke. You wanted to make a racist joke.
No. A joke about race that is not in itself inherently racist. Now, if you want to hear a racist joke, Luke, head to the Patreon.
Oh my God, what a plug.
That's where we can say things. Look, we can say what the woke media won't let us say.
I'm going to write, you need to now get a racist joke ready for the Patreon.
I need to get one ready for the Patreon. Look, I've got a racist joke in the tank. Actually, okay, so I'm going to be so for real right now. I had a man come to my house today.
Uh-huh.
He had to fix something in my house. And then he asked for the Wi-Fi password.
Oh, no.
And do you know the general kind of idea of my Wi-Fi password?
I do, yeah. It's the N-word.
Don't tell people what... No, all right. But don't tell people what my Wi-Fi password is.
It's a joke.
First of all.
Yeah, okay.
The Wi-Fi password is a punchline.
It's brilliant.
To a setup that is, the Wi-Fi name. So the Wi-Fi name is Don't Say It. And then people ask what the Wi-Fi password is. So ask me, Luke, what's the Wi-Fi password?
Corey, what's the Wi-Fi password?
Oh, Luke, well, it's the N-word, but the one is, the I is a one and the E is a three.
Okay, so I then dutifully go into my phone and I type the N-word into my phone with those modifications and it says, oh, password wrong.
It's the N-word, Luke, but the I is a one and the E is a three.
I wrote the N-word, N.
No, it's the N-word, Luke.
Yes.
How do you understand this comedy bit? It's like, who's on first, you know? Like, we're like Abbott and Costello.
Yeah, getting all your white friends to write racial slurs into your Wi-Fi password box.
Not just my white friends, Luke. My friends of all races.
To your parties. They're all white guys.
No. I mean, some of them are non-binary.
Yeah, it's a very diverse white crowd.
Now, I think someone had a plus one that wasn't white.
Congratulations.
Maybe. I honestly don't know.
You didn't let them in.
The lights were quite dim. It was hard to tell. No, so this guy comes to the house and he asks for the Wi-Fi password and I immediately panic because I'm like, I don't want to have to ask this guy for his phone so that I can type it in because that's like, you know, you don't want to give a random stranger a phone. But also, there is no world in which I am telling this man what my Wi-Fi password is.
If someone did that to me, I would immediately open it and then press the thing where it shows you what the password is and immediately just see whatever the N word.
Look, that's fine. I don't mind if he sees it after the fact when he's leaving, right? He's probably not coming back here. But
not after that.
He wasn't white either. Like, not that it matters, but he wasn't white, so...
all I'm going to say is, thank goodness it was you answering the door and you giving him the password and not Noah.
Let's just say, thank God that Apple allows you to just give people the Wi-Fi password without having to tell them what it is. Because it means I can selectively tell people, do this whole sort of rigmarole with people when I want to.
This guy must be building up a database of like every Wi-Fi password in the entirety of your town.
Yeah, come to think of it. I'm like, dude, could you not just use your data? This is a work phone. Do they not, does British Gas not pay for data?
He's got a side hustle where he just sells your Wi-Fi details to Google or something.
Yeah, well, we do have great Wi-Fi here. So wait, hold on. To Google?
Google has this thing where like they drive around and when they do their street view, right, they also collect all the Wi-Fi usernames, like Wi-Fi SSIDs, they call it, like the Wi-Fi names. And then they use that to make GPS better. So when you like look for where you are, it, not only does it talk to the satellites in the sky or get the data from the satellites in the sky, it also just looks at which Wi-Fis are around you and uses that to pinpoint your location, which is why on your phone, if you give an app access to like networks in the area or the ability to look at what Wi-Fi is, that can allow the app to pinpoint your location even if you don't allow location services.
I love the world that we live in.
Yep. I mean, it makes GPS way more accurate, but also it's terrible for your privacy.
Yeah, it's like it's as though humanity was given a bargain of sorts, you know, a deal with perhaps a devil, wherein, you know, you give up all privacy and ability to connect to people around you so that you can know exactly where you are on the planet at all times
for free as well. It's quite a bargain.
I mean, so long as you buy the phone and then pay for the sort of what the data on the phone. It's totally free.
I'll let you know exactly where you are in hell.
Yeah. I mean, Google's only taking all of your information and selling it or using it or building AI or robots based on you, whatever they're doing over at Google. I don't really know, right? They're just doing that. But everything is free. That's fine. It's just like how Pokemon Go is free. And all they did was use a bunch of scans from people, you know, taking their phones around and pointing it at things to build like this, I don't know, 3D map of the world or something.
For all the new robots that are going to drive around delivering things.
Yeah, and running people off of roads and stopping ambulances and all the wonderful things you want delivery robots to do.
It's lovely. It's lovely. And this is also what was going on when you were filling out those little I'm not a robot forms. That was just training an AI. It wasn't really, you weren't really having to select the stairs. That was just training an AI to recognize stairs.
Yeah, I see why dogs are judging us now. I get it. Honestly, they're like, man, I love ball. I love food. I love run. I love hump. What are you guys doing? Oh, you're getting depressed from Little Brick? But why get depressed from Little Brick? There is grass and there is sun. Be happy.
I think you could be hump all day.
Why not hump? You have room for hump. Hump. Hump in hump room. Do now. Dogs have no command of grammar. So should we get into the topic?
Please, yeah.
So I told you the name of the study and all of these sorts of things. Do you understand broadly what the study might be about?
So it's specifically asking the question of whether female dogs, for some reason only female dogs, can judge you and how good you are at stuff.
Not asking the question of whether female dogs... The title is Female Dogs Evaluate Levels of Competence in Humans, but that's not the question that it's asking necessarily. They had male and female dogs. It's just that, well, we'll get to the results. I don't want to spoil it.
Only girl dogs can judge you.
Bitches be judging. I had to wait so long so that I could say that word, because if I said it too close to the start or the end, then YouTube would have been mad. I've been holding on to that this whole time.
Scientists have proven that bitches be judging.
Look, the results have come in. Bitches be crazy, man. Like, never trust a bitch. I would never refer to a woman that way. Only a woman dog.
My sister lives in Scotland and has a female dog, like a greyhound. And she told me the other day that men who used to like do lots of greyhound racing, either, I don't know if they were racing the greyhounds themselves and training them, or if they were just like going...
Running, as in, when you say racing greyhounds themselves.
Sorry, not like like a foot race, me versus greyhound. Although that sounds, well, actually very disappointing because always the greyhound would win. But I don't know if these were like greyhound trainers or just guys who... had a gambling addiction. But either way, they'll come up to her in pubs and stuff and they'll just go, "Is that a bitch?" Because they'll want to, that what
they're
trying
puppy to do, horny for her greyhound, and they want to make sure that they're not gonna be like, they want to make sure they don't be a gay hound. Okay, no gay hounds, only greyhounds for me, the puppy horny king.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I think what they're trying to do in their sort of emotionally stunted man way is they're trying to signal, I know about greyhounds. I can recognize a female greyhound just by glancing
at the genitals. Yeah, easy.
No.
Does she have big balls?
and they're also sort of quite, yeah, just generally communication stunted, so they just sort of go under their breath in the very Scottish repressed male way, like my grandfather. Is that a bitch?
Love it.
Is that a bitch?
I love it. I will say, dogs are perhaps the easiest animals to sex.
Oh.
Well, I mean, of the common animals you see around, uh-huh. You know? I mean, not necessarily the absolute easiest, but they're up there with, you know, the easiest, because, well, you've seen a dog, right?
Big dangly balls.
Yeah. Big old swingy lipstick tube.
But what if they've had them removed?
Nips.
What?
Nips.
Oh, but I think, but you know, you're standing up. You're not, the dog's not on its under, like upside down. You're not looking at the nips. Man dogs have nips.
Yeah.
Just not very prominent ones.
Exactly.
Just like us.
Man's best friend, just like man. It's insane how much they've become like us, Luke. They've got nips too now. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
You heard about this? Yeah, no, look, I'm just saying that when I see a dog, I just filtered that out.
Okay, yeah.
And maybe on the Patreon, you'll find out what it is I was going to say, I remember. So basically, with these dogs, they're not just looking at female dogs. They looked at male and female dogs. They wanted to see whether they sort of assessed competence in humans. So they kind of start off the paper talking about sort of reputation and altruism and stuff, and how, you know, the reputation that you have amongst your peers, you as a human and your human peers, can affect how you're treated, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, people will want to work with someone that is competent. So, for example, let's say you are some kind of chimp or perhaps an early human type thing and you want to crack open some kind of cocoa nut.
Yes.
Now, would you go to the person that has many cracked cocoa nuts behind them?
Yeah.
Or the person that has no cracked coconuts.
Well, maybe I wouldn't go to the one with loads of cracked coconuts behind them because they might steal my coconut and add it to their pile.
Okay, see, this is why perhaps you wouldn't survive. You're very lucky to have been born when you are. As am I, Luke. I'll be honest with you. With my eyesight and all of the other issues I've got going on, there is not a chance in the world I'd have survived at any time period before right now.
Okay, I'll play along. So I go to the person who has loads of cracked coconuts because they're clearly either really good at cracking coconuts or they've stolen loads of pre-cracked coconuts, but I'm going to assume that hasn't happened because I don't see anyone sobbing nearby. So, and the guy with no coconuts, he's not sobbing. So he's not had all his coconuts stolen. So the other guy must be good at cracking coconuts. And I need my coconuts cracked, Corey.
So yeah, you'd want to go to the person that's more competent, right? You want to go to the competent person. And that's just one reason that sort of being able to judge another person is perhaps useful in terms of evolution, right? There's different sort of ways to describe making judgments. So there's social evaluation, social eavesdropping, image scoring. And yeah, basically, you know, you want to find someone who is going to be helpful rather than harmful, or useful rather than useless.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean that people, you know, don't look after the useless. That's a really horrible way to say it. But don't worry, Luke, we both fall under that. We do a podcast, okay? There's no one, I don't think there's a single person on this podcast, I don't think there's definitely not a single person on this podcast that is useful, but I don't think there's a single person that's ever done a podcast that is useful. Because if you were useful, you'd be doing something useful rather than doing a podcast.
Yeah, or you were useful, but then you became unuseful, so then you're doing a podcast, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like when, do you know when the older lion is driven out of the pride?
Yeah.
We have that. It's called starting a podcast after your career.
Or that thing in Japan where like somebody's like been at a company for years and they don't want to retire them, but they also don't want to fire them. So they just give them pointless tasks to do and like sit them in a corner. It's like I think almost a sort of honor thing of like, you have served this company, so we'll keep you around. But also,
oh, you misunderstand.
Oh, really? Oh, is it sad?
Yeah. So I think what you might be, and I may be wrong, there may be another thing that you're referring to that I'm unaware of, but I've heard of something similar. And I believe what it is that it's sort of difficult to fire people in Japan, or it's not the done thing. You know, there's sort of the social thing. And so instead of firing someone, you get them to quit. And the way that you get them to quit is you essentially give them no work, but they still have to come into work every day and they can't just do whatever it is that they want to do. They've got to basically sit in a room by themselves at a desk doing nothing.
I know loads of people like that.
Yeah, but they probably play on their phones or something.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
But I know loads of people with like full-time jobs and they're like, I've got nothing to do all day.
Yeah, that's an office job. That's an office job. And this is an interesting thing, look, because before computers, obviously everything needed to be done by hand, right? And so 5 days a week made sense. It took ages to do stuff. And you had to wait for all of these things. You had to wait for things to send, arrive, be typed up, things to be computed. Now you can just plug something into a spreadsheet and everyone's got it. And so office work has gone from doing manual sort of like tasks, or like I say manual sort of like these sort of skilled little tasks, typing and all of these sort of things, to the much more difficult task of making it look like you're really busy when your boss is around and getting the exact amount of work you need to get done so that you don't get more work put on top of you. Do you know
but
what
your
I mean?
Boss is doing that too.
Oh, that's close. But the boss's job is to look busy to their boss by telling everyone off for not doing enough, and then sometimes having a meeting where they say, here's what we need to do to change, and then changing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I have a friend, I don't think you'd mind me saying this, I have a friend who works for a fairly large company, many people have heard of, and he is the third, he's a manager, and he has a manager, and his manager has a manager, and I think there's another manager on top of that manager, and he jokes of like, why do we have all these people? What do any of these people do? And they literally just sit in meetings all day and more or less make some decisions, but it's just so bloated and nothing. It's quite depressing to think about.
Yeah, what they're doing, Luke, is something really important, which is, it's in a way you can think of it as supporting the economy, because what they're doing is providing an argument for why universal basic income isn't a good idea, and why everyone needs to have a job for 40 hours a week, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important, because if they weren't doing that, then people might clock. Might be like, hey, wait, hold on a minute. We don't need to be working as much as we are. And then people would probably, you know, want to work less. And that's
the end of the world.
That's bad.
Yeah, it's the end of the world, Corey.
I'm not sure why, but I know it's bad.
scarcity or something.
Ding-a-ling-ling, is that the ad bell?
He's back and he's bellier than ever.
Yes, and he will never end. This bell won't end. Bell won't end. Bell end.
So there is no bell end. Fantastic. Except for you. And me.
That's true, Luke. We both need to get ends put on our bells, which is why you should sign up to our Patreon for the reconstructive surgery that we need.
This is the most uncomfortable sell for the Patreon I've ever engaged in.
Well, Luke, you shouldn't have put the end of your bell into that USB port, should you?
It was actually a meat grinder.
I did the USB port. You did the meat grinder. Both of them were bad ideas. But this is the things we do for
science,
the podcast.
Corey. It was for science.
Look, just because you were holding a clipboard at the time, it doesn't make it science. I know that's usually the case, but when it comes to putting yourself in a meat grinder, I think that's where it ends. But no, please do sign up to our Patreon for a video of Luke putting his meat in a grinder.
For sure. Yeah, we'll do an AI generated thing of that.
Oh, no, we don't do AI on the podcast, Luke.
Oh, okay. I'll take one for the team. I've only got one to give, but I'll give it.
You'll give one for the team, and I'll take £1 or dollar or more than that from you every month for videos, not of Luke necessarily jamming himself into a meat grinder, but also not necessarily not that. I don't know. Maybe we'll make it a stretch goal.
Our Patreon is a wonderful place. Every time we do an episode, we record an extra little episode afterwards called After Dark. Is that what it's still called?
I don't know. I'm still caught on the meat grinder thing. So I don't think we even need to explain what it is that we do. Yeah. I think we just tantalize them with the meat grinder and they'll figure it out for themselves. You guys know what Patreon is, right? It's where creators go to put themselves into meat grinders.
That's, the meat grinder of the content machine.
Sign up. We're going back to the episode now.
Bye-bye.
So look, we've spoken about why judging is important. I'll quickly run through some animals that also judge each other than humans. So chimps will judge each other. Ravens, cleaner fish can judge each other. Dolphins and bonobos will apparently judge abstract agents or simple moving shapes.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Here's the sentence. Recent studies have shown that some animals even socially evaluate abstract agents or simple moving shapes.
Abstract agents, I'm guessing, is like an AI agent. They're like, ChatGPT is not as good as it used to be. And then simple moving shapes, they're like, that triangle's ugly.
Those are two opinions that I absolutely believe that a dolphin would hold.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I know that dolphins would think that.
If it's got any brain power, it knows ChatGPT is not as good as it used to be.
Yeah, and that's why the people who are all at the top of AI need AI to think, because their brain power is lacking, which is why they want to use it. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Do you know what I mean?
And that's also why ChatGPT took that massive multi-billion pound immoral deal from the US Pentagon to spy on Americans maybe one day in the future. We'll see.
Now that's a shape that I'm going to judge.
You can also judge the autonomous drone running on ChatGPT that comes towards you as it kills you erroneously.
Hey, that's the way that I want to go. Also,
is this libel? It might be libel. I don't know.
I think it's spoken, so it's slander.
Ah, okay. Oh, I can deal with slander. That's fine.
That's fine.
I didn't write it down. Your Honor, I did not write it down.
But YouTube will automatically sort of caption this, make a transcript. So that might then be libel. But of course, we're very lucky because it is an AI transcript. So it probably won't even say anything that you actually said.
It was wrong. And also, I didn't write it, so they can sue Google.
That'll go well.
No lawyers, just ChatGPT and Google's Gemini just making legal arguments at each other in the courtroom.
That's the future of basically, what, the courts? Just two AIs going at it forever. There will be no one that is ever prosecuted for no one's going to be ever jailed for anything in the future. Mm-hmm. Not because there's no crime, but because these things are not going to be able to end a conversation.
You're so right. And if you'd like, I can elucidate why you're right about that.
No, absolutely. I love that idea. And I think we should push forward with some more ideas about how good I am at doing this.
That is a fantastic point. And honestly, like one of the sexiest people I've ever seen said that, and it was you. And only like a few people in the whole history of the world have thought of that, and you're one of them. Congratulations. If you'd like, I could give you a list of five other things that you could have said but didn't, but would have been good if you did say them.
You're too good at doing, like, I know that I can improv AI. You can, and that is terrifying.
Honestly, thanks for saying that. And it's really good to connect with you.
It feels like it's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers or like a zombie movie. When you do that, I get this visceral kind of, it just, there's something wrong. It's like Uncanny Valley.
It is weird that they all do it as well. Like most of the major AIs kind of all do roughly the same sycophancy. Like they kind of say something like, That's honestly a fascinating question, and one that most people don't think to ask. And then they'll like break down why your question was worth asking in the first place, which obviously you already think that because you asked the question.
Why does taint? Well, I was going to say, why does paint taste so good? But why does taint paint so good?
You're, honestly, that's, you know, what a fantastic point, Corey.
No, look, really, why does taint paint so good?
Should we ask?
No.
Okay. I mean, no. Let's not burn up an ocean to ask some nonsense like that.
No, it's an important question. We shouldn't use AI for it. We should ask someone who's smart and knows the answer. I'm not going to, you know, waste water on a nonsense answer for such an important question. But what I will do is stop wasting the viewer's time,
please,
and the listener's time by carrying on with this thing that we were actually supposed to be talking about. So there are also non-human primates that will socially evaluate humans, chimps, capuchins, marmosets, common marmosets, not your rare marmoset.
The proletariat of the marmosets.
Absolutely. The working class marmosets.
I guess, is it a form of judging where, like, you know, when you see like birds dancing for each other to try and attract a mate? I suppose that is sort of a form of judging as well. Like, they're judging. I don't know if it's like conscious judging. Maybe to judge, you have to be like thinking about it deliberately.
No, I think,
like,
it's conscious judging.
Yeah.
With birds evaluating. Because, like, it's kind of subjective, you know? Like, how good a bird is at dancing and showing off its feathers.
Yeah.
Thank you for helping me with that. I would not have gotten to the word feathers had you not said it at the exact same time as I did. I was really hoping you'd save me.
And I did. So there you go. You're welcome.
Thank you. We're birds of a
feather.
Thank you, man. Thank you. We finish each other's
sausages.
Feather.
That's why you're not getting sausages. I've eaten them all.
So yeah, moving on to dogs. So dogs, obviously, first domesticated animal that we know of. Also, that's probably true as well. First domesticated animal from like 15,000 years ago. And they've become kind of like, they've co-evolved with us, right? So dogs kind of have eyebrows now. They can read human emotions. Mm. We can read their emotions, you know, that sort of thing. So basically, they wanted to look at dogs because they thought, well, dogs have evolved along with us. They are socially kind of not ingrained in our, but like dogs so have some kind of social understanding of humans and vice versa. So to understand how animals judge people, dogs would be a good candidate, right?
I suppose that makes sense because dogs, like in our evolutionary history, I suppose they were sort of allying with us, weren't they? They were sort of like coming to take our scraps of food, but then they were, I guess, giving us some protection and companionship. And they wouldn't want to do that with some loser who sucks at hunting whatever we were hunting, because there'd be no scraps to eat.
That's true.
They've got to evaluate. I suppose if there was any, there is a certain amount of selective pressure for the dogs that were good at judging which humans didn't suck at whatever tasks the humans needed to do at the time. So if you didn't do that as a dog, you probably didn't get many scraps.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And being cute probably helped too.
That's true. Being in creating puppy horniness in the early humans.
I regret bringing up your phrase.
I regret
puppy horny
saying it so many years ago.
Hey, look, if you didn't want it to be brought up forever, including I was gonna say at your wedding, but you've already done that. So what's your next big one? Your funeral, I guess.
Yeah, you're gonna be there saying
he died as he lived. Puppy horny. Husband, father. Puppy horny.
I really hope I don't get like mauled by 20 puppies. That's how I go. And you're like, I have something to say.
I'm just hoping that I get to be the sort of executor of your estate. Like,
okay.
I'm not saying that I hope, you know, your wife passes before you.
Right.
But what I am saying is that I hope.
And child.
I didn't want to say that because that seemed too dark. But
and
yes,
sister,
I suppose.
And parents.
I feel like, well, I mean, I feel like I'd worm my way in there, even if your sister was still
kicking.
You're
truly the Prince Andrew of, or Prince Harry of executing my estate. Quite a lot of people have to die. You're not very high in the line of succession, is what I'm saying.
I mean, I feel like I'm more of a Harry than an Andrew for several reasons.
You love cocaine.
And I fully admitted to going to the island, okay? Right off the bat. I did nothing there. The food was good, okay? That's why I was there. I didn't know about nothing else. Also, I've made that joke several times, and then I was watching It's Always Sunny, and I realized It's Always Sunny made that same joke years ago, not even about this. It's fun to know that you've stolen stuff, isn't it?
Well,
Completely accidentally.
You came up with it as well. You were just as clever. Yes.
I'm just as smart as skilled comedy writers, and that's why we're doing this podcast. Let me continue.
Okay, please. You asked me to let you continue, and then you asked me to speak.
I didn't ask you to speak.
I can see you cutting the camera to me. I know when you want me to speak, sir.
Don't look at this. This is...
I can't not look at it.
You're breaking the fourth wall, Luke. This is... People are supposed to watch this thinking that they're just having a normal conversation with friends, okay? Mm-hmm. And if we start letting the, you know, letting the curtains down, letting the... lifting the curtain,
yep.
And then they'll know that this isn't real.
Nailed it.
That you're not even in this room anymore.
You know, in like sitcoms like Friends or like TV shows with a live studio audience where there's that big sign that says applause.
Yes.
Essentially, I'm living that where I can see when Corey cuts the camera to me. If you're listening to this, then this might be a bit alien to you, but I can see when Corey cuts the camera to me, which is essentially a big red sign that's just going, react to this in some way.
I've made a joke and I'd like for you to laugh.
Ha 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 ha.
Broccoli.
Ha, ha, ha.
Okay, no, for real, we need to get through this. So they want to look at competence. Competence is, do you know what competence is?
No, I don't.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Could you imagine what competence might be?
Not even slightly. I'm not capable of that either.
Everything that you're not?
Yeah. Oh, that's, okay, I'll write that down for my Luke dictionary. Competence, everything I'm not.
Jesus. So, no, competence basically... being able to do stuff. So intelligence, effectiveness, skills, creativity, confidence, these are all things they list as being aspects of competence.
And they're all going to have the same definition in my dictionary.
Just not what you are.
Everything I'm not. Little sad emoji.
You can't put emojis in a dictionary.
It's my dictionary. I can do what I like.
Okay, fair. Yeah, yeah. You are drafting up this dictionary, by the way. That's your next thing that you've got to do.
And all of the emojis will have like definitions for them so that I can use them as tone modifiers, which, as you know, is how I like to use emojis in text messages. Sorry, tone clarifiers. I'm clarifying my tone with a little winky face so you know it wasn't really meant as like too harsh. Winky face?
That really sets you apart from everyone else on this planet because nobody else would ever use emojis to convey tone, emotion, or anything. Emojis are for everyone else, Luke. Everyone else just uses emojis as fun little pictures that mean nothing.
Yeah.
But you alone.
But I understand that's what everyone else is doing, but no one else has quite sort of like defined it as weirdly specifically as I have as a tone clarifier. Like, I know that that's what everyone's doing, but I really had to like say it out loud, didn't I?
No, that's so true, because like I've noticed that I am really different from the rest of the world insofar as, you know, I use words, you all know this about me, I use words as thing describers.
To be fair, a lot of people don't do that. In my experience, people use words as like pointing at emotions or at pointing at things that they don't even really know they're saying, and then they expect you to understand them, and you're like, I do understand it, but also I'm doing the work.
If only people could use emojis when they spoke. Faces.
Yeah.
Faces. Yeah.
Winky face.
Yeah, I just realized that the face is the emoji of the of talk. Yeah. So dogs, Luke. They got about 74 dogs. Pet dogs.
Pets at home.
People's pets. Where do they... you don't ask where they get the people from.
Where do I get 74 pets from people? I want them.
No, so they're not... They're just... They bring the dogs in for the study. They've got 74 dogs. So 43 females, 31 males. An additional 14 dogs were not included in the final sample due to lack of calmness. That was 11 of them.
Lack of calmness?
Yeah, yeah.
Very positive way of saying they were batshit crazy.
Absolutely. Procedural errors, which happened in 3 cases. They were of different breeds. They were from 5 months to 14 years old, which is such a wide age range. And the idea was they essentially had a person they split the dogs up into different groups and all this sort of stuff, like control, blah, 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 right? The actual sort of method was they had a person try to open up a container in front of the dog.
Mm-hmm.
There were 2 separate groups. There were people who struggled to open up the container and finally gave up. And then there were people who opened the container successfully and competently.
Mm-hmm.
And the next sort of step of the experiment was essentially having 2 people, one competent person and one incompetent person. And the competent person, they would then open up sort of a container of food. And they tracked which person the dog was paying attention to, right? So both people had a container of food that the dog had not seen before. And basically what they found is that dogs looked significantly longer, female dogs looked significantly longer than males when a person who was competent at opening baited containers manipulated a container previously unknown to the dog. Moreover, the female dogs preferentially approached the competent person. In other words, their looking direction predicted their subsequent choice behavior.
Interesting. Okay, so the only thing that I have to question about that is that I understand that the competency, like paying attention to the competency is to a certain extent a sort of byproduct of that. But they're not really just paying attention to which one they think is going to give them the food first.
Like, how are they discerning who's going to be able to give them the food?
I know that, but what I mean is that they are. Yes, I understand that they are, to a certain extent, they're tracking competency there. But I guess what I'm saying is, are they assigning competency as a trait of the person, or are they just good at keeping track of how quickly the food tin is going to open?
There was no food in the first container. So they just know this person's bad at opening containers,
but
or this person's
good
at opening containers.
The first container was empty.
They'll have found it out when it was empty.
Okay. Yeah, but what I mean is they might still have been anticipating the food, and so they still understand. I get what you're saying. All I'm saying is, like, I feel like this could have been, like, I feel like there's something muddy here in the fact that the dog really wants the container to open because it's anticipating treats. Whereas if it was like, we put a bunch of dogs down and watched people play Call of Duty, and then, or like, not, yeah, it's a joke, but like we watched them juggling, or we watched them, I mean, they would have wanted the balls because they're juggling and balls, and dogs like balls. You know what I mean? Like, something.
No,
where, yes,
honestly,
you do,
no.
You do know what I mean?
Like, you can't tell me I know what you. I don't know what you mean. Okay, my perspective of what you're saying here is that the dogs. You're saying that the sort of the issue with this experiment is, well, the dog is just looking at wherever it thinks it's going to get the food quickest. And so it's not about competency, it's about quickness of getting food. My argument to that would be, they need to understand who is competent at opening a container, because then they know who is going to give them the food. If they were not able to track competency,
yeah,
then they, or judge competency, then they would, you'd expect like a 50-50 split of someone's opening a container. That's a hard thing to say. Someone's opening that thing. I'm just going to go to whichever one. They know who is more competent.
Yeah. I know what I'm trying to say. I think what I'm trying to say is,
I think,
like,
the difficulty is everyone else knowing what you're trying to say.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's almost like the theory of mind thing, in the sense of, like, I understand that they are tracking competency at opening. Like, they're seeing this person in combination with a container, and that one's more likely to open sooner because this person opened this other container more quickly last time.
Remember, the first one, the incompetent people struggled to open the container and then gave up.
Right. Okay. I guess what I'm saying is that, is the dog actually applying that in their mind as a trait of the person, or are they just going, oh, this container is next to this person, and when a container is in the hands of this person, it opens faster. It's more of a trait of the container as opposed to a trait of the person. I understand that's a very small distinction, but
I would argue, and I'm going to be, I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
I know you're not trying to pick at it, but I would argue that it is far more likely for a social animal like a dog, which has evolved alongside a social animal like a human, to place sort of value judgments upon a human rather than an inanimate container.
I agree. I've got one more example of what I mean. Because what if what if you had the dog, like, okay, this is gonna sound, as soon as I get ready to say this, I know how stupid it sounds. What if you had the dogs pay attention to the person trying to do, like, some origami?
Oh my God, dude.
My point is like, watching that, the dogs are exposed to the person doing something dexterous with their hands that isn't intrinsically linked to the dog getting a treat. And then in the follow-up experiment, then there's a container with a treat in, and they are, like, extrapolating from, oh, from my experience, this person is competent at doing stuff with their hands, and so I can expect that I'll get that treat sooner from this person. That's what I mean, is that, like, I understand that that's kind of changing two variables.
I don't think the variables are even the issue there. I think the issue is that what you're trying to do is get a dog to understand and make a judgment about something that a dog has no reason to be able to understand. Why? Like, you're not just seeing whether a dog can judge competency. What you're trying to do there is say, can a dog see that someone is dexterous and then apply them being dexterous to other things?
Yeah,
that's beyond just seeing, understanding competency. That's understanding competency and then understanding competency in one area being applied elsewhere.
I agree. So I agree that my thing is overextending. to the task, right? But I personally, the thing I'm trying to get at, I'm not, sorry, this is boring.
No, I want to understand.
I think what it is that like, that experiment doesn't necessarily track competency in, it doesn't necessarily detect the dog's ability to judge competency. What it might be is just the dog paying attention to how quickly the container opened. It might have nothing to do with whether they think the person is good at opening containers, whether they think they just literally like, if I set up a computer that, and all it did was it tracked whether the tin was open or not, and it tracked the number of seconds between the experiment starting and when the tin opened. When the tin opened and you saw there was no treat in there, you know, we know that like anticipation of reward, you still get a hit of dopamine even if you don't get the reward, right? So if you gamble, you get the same level of dopamine whether you win or lose, and that motivates you to try again, right? And so if I had a computer tracking how many seconds it takes to open that tin, right, and then there was no reward at the end, the next time I am like presented with some other people who are opening tins, I might be like, that tin's going to open faster. And it has nothing to do with me judging the competency of the person opening the tin. It's literally just like, oh, I've associated this smell or this face with tin open fast. And it doesn't necessarily mean I'm paying attention to the person being any good at opening tins. It just means I've got a time, like I've just got a time in my head of how long tins take to open when this person's there. I know that's a very small distinction. I know, and maybe I'm nitpicking.
I think you're not tracking anything other than time. No, but I think you're being far too rigid in your understanding of competency.
Uh-huh.
I think you're perhaps being too rigid in what like sort of assessing competency or judging is, right?
Okay.
The dog is tying it to the person, right?
Yeah, of course.
It doesn't matter whether it's the smell or whatever the thing they use to discern. It's tied to the person.
Yeah.
They're looking at the person that opened it, that managed to open the thing before, even when it's an unfamiliar container that they have not seen.
Yeah.
And so whether or not they're like, it's based on time or whatever, the fact is they know, like what they seem to know, that the person who did well at this task previously,
yeah,
is the one who is probably going to get them food the fastest.
I agree. But if I did the task by just smashing the tub open with a sledgehammer, the dog would just be like, oh, that's the most competent one. Like, because I smashed it open with a sledgehammer.
And that is, and in the eyes of the dog.
It's not competency.
But for the eyes of the dog, yes, it is.
I guess what I
think you're applying a human view of competency, but for the dog, what competent is getting me food the quickest, the most able to get me food. They don't know how to open a container themselves necessarily, but seeing that someone is able to do a task better than someone else, and if their judgment of better is getting the thing open the fastest, right?
Yeah.
I think you're being too rigid in your thinking here in saying that, well, if I smashed it open with a sledgehammer, the dog would want me. Sure, but there's only so many ways we can sort of get, like, okay, look, here's a quote from the paper, right?
Yeah.
Several studies have examined whether dogs can use their own direct experiences to distinguish between humans. For example, dogs learned to prefer a generous experimenter who allowed the dog to eat food rather than a selfish experimenter who ate the food before the dog could have it. Such preferences are not limited to situations involving food. Nitschner et al. Used social reinforcement instead of food and showed that dogs prefer an experimenter who behaved in a friendly fashion towards them over one who ignored them. These results indicate that dogs prefer someone associated with beneficial outcomes, i.e. food or social treats. So do you understand what I mean?
Like, yeah.
We know that dogs can discern between people who are nice to them and people who are not nice to them, between people who give them food and people who don't give them food. I feel like, okay, you're getting stuck on the fact that like a dog, like understanding that it's the word competency, right? I feel like you're thinking, well, a dog can't understand who is competent and incompetent, but you've got to look at it from the dog's perspective.
Yeah.
Competent is getting the thing open so that I can get the food the fastest.
Okay. Last chance. Let me try one last thing. Okay. Because I really think I'm trying. I know what I'm trying to say. With the whole origami thing or the whole like juggling, or what I'm trying to say is, like, okay, think of a friend who you think is a fairly competent person at a bunch of stuff.
Oh, hold on, wait, let me, because I feel like you're gonna twist it on me, and a lot of my friends are very competent at many things, and like me, incompetent at many, many other things.
Okay.
Hold on, wait. Let me think.
That makes it complicated.
It does. I have a friend in my head. Good.
Okay. And now think of a friend, don't say it out loud, who's not very competent at anything. Or many things.
See, that's the same person.
So, okay. Have you got an incompetent friend in your head? Who's not the same person?
Okay, it's harder to think of a competent friend. How many friends do I... What friend? Who are my friends?
Shall I make my point?
Please make your point, because I'm struggling to think of friends.
Imagine you had a friend who's competent at a bunch of stuff, and you have a friend who's not very competent at a bunch of stuff, and you set them on a new task that both of them have never seen.
Yes.
Right? You are probably, whether you'll end up being right or not, you're probably going to assume that the person who's competent at a bunch of stuff is going to be more competent at this unseen task than the friend who's not competent at many things. Because you've extrapolated you've generalized competency, right? So my point is that if the task was like, I thought when you were saying like dogs judge competency, that basically dogs sort of judge whether you're good at a bunch of stuff and that they will then infer that you'll be good at other stuff. Even if it's sort of generalized, right? Because you're generally competent. Whereas this to me feels like it's testing, do dogs learn that they'll get treats fast from a certain person? And that has not really got anything to do necessarily with whether they think they're competent at the thing that's stopping them getting the treat. They just go like, treat come quick with this guy, which I understand to a certain extent is competency, but it's not because they've judged, necessarily because they've judged this person to be competent. It's just because they've like, treat come in 10 seconds from this guy and 20 seconds from this guy. Like that doesn't, they've not extrapolated anything. They've not inferred anything. They've not even necessarily, by they, I mean the dog, they've not necessarily even formed any opinion on the person or their competency at any particular task or general tasks. They've just gone, this guy fast at treats, which, like I say, could also be done with a sledgehammer. You know, I know you're saying, but that's my point, is that I'm getting hung up on the word competency, but because it's in the title of the thing, whereas the title of this could be dogs learn treat come fast from person and then they expect treat come fast from person next time.
That is being competent at opening a container.
I just don't think it is, but fine.
If someone struggles to open a container and then gives up,
yeah,
would you say they are competent at opening a container or not?
I would say, yeah, I would say that they are competent at opening a container.
The point is that a dog can see two people, one who can't open, do a thing, and one who could do a thing.
Yeah.
And then when shown a completely different container that they've not seen before,
yeah,
they're paying more attention to the person who managed to do it before, which means that on some level, they must understand when someone is failing at a task and know when someone is not failing at a task and remember that and then use that to sort of control or decide on future actions.
See, I just personally, this is why I said the gambling thing, right? Why I said the gambling thing is because, like, how I would see that with no psychological training at all, by the way, so to be clear, is that I would see that the dog is basically sitting there when the person's trying to open a tub, right? They're anticipating what's in the tub. And when the tub is opened, they get a hit, even if there was nothing in the tub. Like, I know that something like that happens from the like gambling studies where you get a dopamine hit regardless of whether you win, right? Whereas when the person fails and gives up, they never got that. The dog never got that sort of hit. The loop never closed of like, oh, anticipation and anticipation. Oh, there was nothing there, right? It was just anticipation. Oh, we've given up. Okay. So then when they're like trying to open a different tub, like, to me, this is just like dogs extrapolate across tubs. They just like, this tub is the same as this tub. Like, I know that this tub might open and therefore I'm paying attention because last time that tub opened. And I understand that that is, to a certain extent, them tracking the competency at opening tubs. I do get that. It's just that it also could just be like tracking the anticipation of whether the tub will open at all, as opposed to like inferring that the person is good at opening tubs. And I know this is me dying on a tiny little hill, like with a very small nitpicky little thing, but this is just what I thought when I heard you saying it. This is what I felt, was like, I essentially had this experience of the dog, right? I was anticipating what you were going to say. I was anticipating, and then my anticipation was not met, and then I was like, ah, but Ah, now I'm annoyed, and this is why.
No, it's totally fine. It's totally fine. I mean, I see where you're coming from. The points you're making, like they are sound. More research is needed, but I this sounds bad.
I'm going to apply for funding for my Call of Duty study, where the dogs watch me play Call of Duty.
Yeah, there were previous studies where the apparatus was too complicated for the dogs to work.
See, like I said at the start, dogs are thick.
No, yes, okay. I get it. You're puppy horny. Let's set that aside for a moment. I understand. Now, look, I see where you're coming from. Yeah. I understand. And I'm not trying to refute it entirely. I think my issue is just that I probably trust dog scientists more than I trust you, Luke Cutforth.
Oh, see, I didn't get that. That's
yeah.
Fair. Okay, that's
just
fair.
When it comes to dogs.
Okay, I didn't realize that's where we were going with this. Fine.
And probably most other stuff.
Yeah. So you've judged my competency compared to the dog scientists.
No, I just have seen you open containers, and I know they can probably do it faster than you.
They've had loads of practice because they've been opening them for all these dogs. I've not had any practice. You set me practicing with 37 dogs or whatever. I'm going to be real competent opening tubs, my friend.
I get where you're coming from, and you're right. On some level, that there is some ambiguity as to whether the dogs are judging competency or whether they're... Well, actually, do you know what? No, I disagree with you. I'm not even going to give you... I disagree with you. I think if a dog knows who's able to do a thing and isn't able to do a thing...
That's where I disagree with you. I don't think we know that they are sensing anything to do with able to do a thing. They could literally just be tracking amount of time and they have no idea why that time happens. Like,
but that's irrelevant. They don't need to have a higher understanding. The point is that they're able to evaluate levels of competence, even if it's indirect, by just measuring the length of time that someone's able, like that it takes for someone to do something, right? Like they're still seeing, oh, this person couldn't do this thing and this person did do this thing. And it's not even a time thing. I don't even know why I'm bringing time into it, because it's not about who took longer. The people who didn't do it, like they struggled for a while, then gave up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there were people who did open the box. So it's not a thing about time. It's literally who was able to do it and who wasn't.
Well, it's just time infinite. Never happened. Yeah.
But at that point, it's then Boolean, right? It's like either they did it or they didn't do it. The time is irrelevant.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. Cool.
Cool. Great. Have anything else to say?
Hang on. So at the top, you said that that dogs can't judge our competency.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic.
Oh, but man dogs can't really judge our competency, just the girl dogs.
So it says, our data also indicate that more attention should be given to potential sex differences in dogs' social evaluation abilities. So females seem to be better at it.
So if a boy dog likes you, that doesn't really mean anything. If a girl dog likes you, that means you might be quite good at stuff.
That applies for humans as well. It is incredibly easy to please a man.
Yeah, I mean, we have a predominantly female audience, so go us. Where you must be doing well if this extrapolates to dogs, to humans as well as dogs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think that.
Or do we have a predominantly female dog audience? That'd be cool.
You know what? YouTube, they don't give you the breakdown when it comes to different species.
That would be speciesist, to be fair.
Exactly. And that's all, Luke. That's it.
Oh, God's sake.
No, that is all from us. Before we go, we'd like to thank all of our patrons with an extra special thank you to you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode down in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can find and contact us at SciGuysPod.co.uk.
That's SciGuysPod.co.uk. SciGuysPod.co.uk.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCupforth everywhere. And
you can follow us both to the Patreon.
Hooray!